Well, hello everybody, and welcome to another episode of Going Downhill. This is Wendy.
And I'm Shelly.
Hello, Shelly. How's Ontario?
Happy holidays, Wendy.
Holidays for who?
Well, I don't know. Like, do you have any indigenous things that you celebrate at this time of year? It's the solstice.
No, but I do like bannock every day, so.
Well, I don't know, because I don't like, because of the solstice and stuff, I don't know if there was anything for that, or I don't profess to know, and that's why I asked to be sensitive.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your sensitivity training that you probably were forced to take by the government, but last podcast I said I don't know anything about religions and that, I guess, or stuff. Anyway, no, we don't celebrate anything differently. Thank you for asking.
Anyway, happy holidays and Merry Christmas to your kids and you anyway.
Okay, so first of all, those words Merry Christmas, those don't usually come out of your mouth. So right, where we don't celebrate it as much for yourself, is that correct?
No, I do not. I'm not a holiday person. I've been trying to this year get into the holiday spirit. So I'm going to a friend's Christmas party tonight, and I made Christmas cookies.
Yes, and this is also so unlikely. Like, well,
I make cookies every year. Yeah, I make cookies every year. So, like, and I don't like, just because I don't celebrate Christmas doesn't mean I'm going to be a Grinch and ruin it for everybody else. And I like the spirit of giving.
I like that about you too.
Well, thank you. Uh-huh. So it's a thing. So yeah, so I made cookies, and then it's a friend's birthday today. So I made him cookies, and he's also a fist TD. So I made him fist TD cookies.
Oh, those weren't the holly cookies?
No, the holly cookies are another thing altogether. Those are my X-rated holiday cookies for the adults.
Well, way to go getting in Christmas spirit. I haven't booked or baked anything. So, you know.
There you go.
Not a shocker. Well,
so we have some women that are going to be getting into the Christmas spirit, and some men, because we had two night races. We had Courchevel, and then we had Madonna di Campiglio.
That's right. We did. So why don't we go to France for the ladies?
Sure. We'll do the ladies first, as they raced first Thursday. They raced on Thursday. It was the night race. Interesting conditions, for sure.
Well, I like the night races. To me, it's like more of a party atmosphere. Mm-hmm. How you feel?
I agree. I think that they should do more of them, to be honest. So we have the course name is Stade y Alais. I'm like getting confused in my languages here. The start altitude is 2,015 meters. The finish altitude is 1,805. The vertical drop is 210 meters. The first course setter was Mauro Pini from Slovakia, with 66 turning gates, 68 gates. Course setter for the second run was Christoph Kenzel, I'll say, from Switzerland. And we had 67 gates and 65 turning gates.
That just sounds like a lot of work. That's a lot of turns.
Yeah, yeah.
67?
Yeah, what did you think of this course?
Well, I think the first one, maybe not as technically challenging as the second one, but the hill itself is quite challenging in certain sections. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was very steep, so I think the basis of the course was not overly challenging, just a couple of the sections that were. They did have a lot of combinations in there, which I think helps bring less boredom to the run, shall we say.
I agree. This is one of those courses that's very much the setters that make it interesting, for sure. And I also think that when it comes down to how the skiers skied it, they could run this one a little straighter than the second course, for sure.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, less gates, right? So that's less gates, less turns, a little bit straighter, more of a bomber course.
Well, in this race in general, I thought the conditions made it more interesting than anything else.
Yeah, that's right. So the first run wasn't quite as, not treacherous, as
it was pretty treacherous the second run.
The weather definitely came in for the second run. There was some fog in there, snow, rain. It wasn't very pleasant.
No, it wasn't. So, I mean, do you have anything to say about the first run in particular? I didn't think there was anything that really stood out to me. It was, again, the Vlhova-Shiffrin show mostly.
It was. It was a very basic set. Very simple, very easy. I didn't see anything exciting about the first run.
Yeah, I mean, we had Vlhova coming in second, Schifrin coming in first. You know, third was Leinsberger for Austria. Yeah, not a ton of attack from the backs in this one. I mean, we had Clarisse Brèche from France that actually pulled it off as number 69 and number 45, Kristen Lysdell. But Kristen Lysdell has been popping in here and there. I'm just waiting for the new fist list to come out so that she can get a better bib.
So are you talking about the first run or are you talking about the second run? Because you started talking about the first run.
No, I'm talking about the first run. So these are people that like attack from the back, as in like made the 30 flip that I didn't expect, especially in a sprint like this. But also that straighter course can also benefit some of those younger racers because that allows for a little bit more of error prone. Like you can make things up a little bit more.
That's right. And mistakes aren't exacerbated by all the extra turns that came within the second run. So the times are a little bit closer together for that first run. Yep. And then it kind of separates the men from the boys, shall we say, in the second run.
The girls from the women?
Yeah. Whatever, it just came out of my mouth.
So, it is a turn of phrase. We're not getting into gender politics on this podcast.
No, we won't.
That's a on different podcast altogether. Not touching that one with a 50-foot gate.
That's right. So lots and lots of combinations in the second course. There's an underneath hairpin, which in my opinion actually saves some of the athletes when they're coming, because they got late on the gates before that, and if there wasn't an underneath hairpin, they would not have been able to get up and above that other gate.
I agree. And I thought that the run in itself and the conditions were definitely, visibility was an issue. The light would have been flat, super foggy for some athletes more than others. Definitely in that midsection, super foggy came down. Like even the camera guys were having issues keeping their lenses clean. You know, it was, and then also you're getting into softer conditions at that point too. 0 degrees, the snow starts to absorb some of that moisture. And so the run definitely will be changing.
Absolutely. And they had really only one, not really one, there was one section just below the middle, and it was really off the natural rhythm of the course. So if they didn't anticipate it and set up properly during that more offset section, it did cause problems.
Yeah, that's one of those mental things where your inspection really comes in handy and you have to rely on those course reports, especially the course reports on a race like this where the conditions are changing is very key.
Well, what I found surprising is even though the first run was, in my opinion, not a super difficult course to run, there were still 21 DNFs.
Yes. Yes, there was. And I think that generally comes down to, like, some people say that it comes down to sometimes people don't perform as well at night when they're accustomed to racing during the day as well. So sometimes it's that mental prep and the ability for to get that body going and that excitement, I think. That might have been part of it. Also, sometimes the excitement of racing in front of a crowd like that, you know, I don't know. I'm just putting it out there. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think the crowd being involved is amazing, and I'm going to separate that from the athletes. The athletes, you hear the crowd, you know, but you're so focused, you're not really thinking about the crowd. So I don't want to say that, but I think maybe the timing, I agree with you. For the night race, they are used to racing days. So coming into a night, it's a maybe a bit of a different attitude.
Yeah, and also vision-wise, I always wonder if, I mean, the Norwegians did pretty well in this one, and sometimes I wonder if those northern countries, because they're more accustomed to training under lights, even during the day as kids, sometimes that does, I think, give them a little bit of an edge in those night races because they're accustomed to that type of lighting.
Well, they can't be that accustomed because they weren't on the podium. But
no, but they did, but I mean, for there, a lot of them made that top 30 flip. And I think, I don't know, sometimes I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, it is a interesting thing to think about.
It's only a theory. It's a working theory.
That's right.
Maybe I'll ask if I get the chance one of the Norwegian athletes about that.
Well, it is kind of disappointing. Our Canadian gal, Laurence Saint-Germain, she's out with an ankle injury, so she's not able to participate in this one, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I have to, Amelia Smart, she definitely crossed the finish line in a most spectacular fashion, that's for sure.
Wow. I don't think your coaches told her that's not the fastest way to go across the finish line.
No, I mean, usually sometimes you want to reach for it, but not like that.
Oh my God, no. And she is one of the lucky ones who took advantage of that reverse hairpin. because she was back before that, and she just happened to go through the gate. So
yeah, and so her second last gate before she came through, she kind of got Leighton back, ejected from the ski, and then lucky for her, quick feet and good muscle timing, just kind of threw her legs over while she was falling in the right line and the direction that she needed for to make that last gate. And it was kind of unsure. She didn't really know herself, I think, if she actually had made that last gate. So well, she slid across the finish line on her face.
Not. I don't think she waxed her face, but well, maybe she does. I don't know. Anyway, so, not the fastest way to get across that line.
Well, you can ask her maybe one day. Do you wax your face for this?
Another gal who's out is Wendy Holdner. I think we mentioned her last podcast. Mm-hmm. Out with a broken ankle. She won't be back until March. And did you know she has had 115 starts and she's only ever missed two races?
Yes. Yeah, isn't quite amazing. Yeah.
So she's pretty disappointed at missing out this part.
Yeah, I'm sure. But again, like skiing is a sport where, you know, the injured and then you come back from it. And that's it. Just focus on what you can and what you can control, which is your recovery, right? So
that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Did you want to talk about some of the results?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. I'm going to go back to Amelia Smart. So even though she face planted across the finish, she her top result prior was an eighth in Zagreb in this past season at the in the spring, and she ended up 26 even with the face plant.
No, she could have done quite well. I think she would have popped into the, you know, teens for sure had she been able to not land on her face. But I, you know, it, like just it is what it is, and hopefully we'll see some good. Amelia Smart, she's a really good technical skier. Coming from Panorama, and Panorama is a very great hill for that. Like, they're well known for their tech side of things, so I'm not overly surprised with her ability to ski. She's still young, so, and she's good. So I think, well, I think she's got a lot of potential to kind of pop in there, especially as one of those.
Things. And getting the eighth would have helped in the spring. And I think some more solid results, maybe some top 15s would really help her confidence.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk about Allie Neumeier.
Yep.
Okay. So her, she's had three races so far this season, sixth, and 13th. Mm-hmm. Those are some pretty solid results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ali's from Toronto. She is a Collingwood athlete. I think she's the Georgian Peaks. So
cool.
Short and steep is what she's accustomed to.
But yes.
She tied for 13th.
She did. Now, up until she made a mistake at the very bottom of the first run, she was in fourth. Mm-hmm. And then she made a massive mistake. So hopefully she'll take that going forward and realize what she can do, because she was in fourth until she made that mistake.
Yeah, you can't lose that focus even for a second on some of these courses, and I think that that's something that comes with experience as well.
Yeah, things happen pretty fast in slalom. So 13th place for Allie, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I personally really liked the skiing of the Norwegians on this course.
You are very Norwegian heavy.
Yeah. I am. What can I say? But I have to also say that I was surprised by Michelle Gissen.
Yes.
Switzerland.
Yes. Now, she ended up in sixth, I believe.
She did end up in sixth, but I really liked her style of skiing and the way that she handled this course. I think it's a good example of if you have an athlete watching this race, I think that it's a really good example of that, because sometimes when you look at like Vlahova and Schifrin, like they're in a completely different league, but when you have you know, a first, second year fist racer, give them someone in the mid pack to watch, or someone that did well, popped in the top 10, that just has a really good solid technique that is kind of just maybe a little bit more on the conservative side, but just solid.
Well, I agree. I think Michelle's runs were solid, but to me, I don't know, she's 3 seconds out. I thought she'd be a little tighter in time.
Yeah, I'm not saying that she was winning. I'm just saying that she skied it well.
Yeah.
And it was one to watch if you're trying to learn how to ski the course. Like, it's not a winning run, but it's one that you should maybe take note of for, like, you know, again, like first, second, your fifth. If you're, you know, trying to Europa Cup it, then maybe be looking at the Vlahova Schifrin show. But
it's
Well,
it's a thing. Those Norway results, they had a 7th, an 8th, and a 13th. Mm-hmm. That's Pretty good. 3 in the top 13.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I'm not...
That's amazing. Okay, but look at Austria. Uh-huh. Austria's 3rd, 4th, 11th, and 11th, 18th. Like that's pretty good too, having 4 in that top section.
Yeah, all anyway. The Katarinas.
Yeah, all of them made the flip, all of them. Yeah, there's so many. I don't know what they do. Hey, Cat G, right?
Maybe. Yeah, and know. Then there's Francesca Grinch.
Then you got Grinch, but anyway, that's I digress. So.
So what did you think? Okay, we're going to go, I'll just say the podium. Vlahova won this one, Shiffrin a second, and Trup was third. And it really is, I mean, the Vlahova Shiffrin show. Trup, like Katarina Trup from Austria, she really did a great job. But when you're 2 seconds back of the leader, like we all recognize that Shiffrin and Vlahova are just, it is, you know, everybody's racing for third after that pretty much. Unless there's a major mistake, it's going to be always them in slalom.
So here's some funny stats. So Shiffrin and Vlahova have recorded first and second finishes in 22 World Cup events. Mm-hmm. 22. Shiffrin beat Vlahova 13 times, and the other way around, Vlahova beat her 9 times. That's a lot.
Yeah. And when Vlahova came down, it was pretty entertaining because, you know, she obviously was in the lead, but she still had Shiffrin, so she couldn't even celebrate her run. So she kind of like stands there, is like smiling, like, hey.
I have another little stat to puke out here.
Okay.
So puke away. Shiffrin and Vlahova, nobody else, no other pair has recorded as many first and second finishes in World Cup slalom events as Shiffrin and Vlahova, like we said, 22 of them. The next second pair, I guess, if you want to call it in that category, would be Shiffrin and Holdner. So yeah. Shiffrin's mentioned again with Holdner.
Yeah. Crazy. It's quite a, until someone decides to retire, it's going to be a while. Yeah. I mean, for Vlahova, I was actually really impressed with her skiing the second round. I thought she really did 100% out ski Shiffrin.
I'm going to agree with you totally. I'm a Shiffrin fan, but Vlahova, she was so focused. She was so quick from edge to edge.
So strong.
Yeah. Excellent balance, right? That really helps in that course.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought that Shiffrin came down and was just a little grindier than we usually see her. She was a little stiffer. Like she just didn't let the ski play and have as much fun as it should have. Also, I think on the flatter courses, Vlahova is going to have definitely an advantage because she is a much bigger girl.
Yeah.
So I think that those two things in combination, I think, yeah. And just in general, like Vlahova was just clean, like just so clean.
No major issues. Like it was so solid. It was so strong. And that was her 30th World Cup victory.
Yep.
30th. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Not bad. I'll take one. Thanks.
I would too. Now Shiffrin though, she did get a bone bruise in Levy. Were you aware of that?
Yes.
Yeah, so does that come into play? Yes, no, who knows?
I don't, so, she won't focus so on here's it. My thing, is everybody's mentioning this bone bruise and so on and so forth. She's won other races. She won a fucking downhill. Like, don't give me that. Like, she can win it. if she's won it before, like, don't be like, oh my God, she's got a bone bruise. Look, like, no, I'm sorry. You did it once, you could do it again. Like, don't give me that. Unless you're, like, re-injuring it constantly, and maybe then you should maybe take a day off for recovery, and that's your call. So I'm not going to sympathize on that one.
Could you sympathize that perhaps she's suffering from some PTSD because she did have a stalker at Tremblant?
Yes, yeah, they were trying to play it like a little bit on the low side there, and
did he know, all he had to do was give her a donut, she totally would have talked to him.
Don't give away that personal information.
Oopsie. Anyway. I digress. Let's talk about Katarina Trupe. This is the third. She's had 3 career podiums, all in slalom, all bronze. So here's another one.
Yep. Yeah, and you feel for her too, because it's going to be hard to not to get that silver or gold position.
Oh my God, yes. She did get off rhythm for a few of the gates in that middle section that I was talking about, where you have to stay in rhythm. Yeah. But the rest of it, I think she skied very solid. And 2.06 out, but very solid in behind those gals.
Yeah, her first run she was fifth, and her second run she was fourth. So that gave her the third place that she needed.
Yeah, that's right. So I don't know. I think it's really good for her. So
hopefully she can
now they France. She did, but it's, she had very quick arcs right in between the turns. Could have been a little quicker, obviously, but she still got third. So congratulations to her.
I mean, I don't really have much more to report on that race. Do you want to move over to the men's?
Right after I tell you who my attack from the backs are, starting 69 and finishing 21st from France, Clarisse. Mm-hmm. You know what that's from? So she got 21st.
I know where it's from. Hopefully the listeners do.
I thought I was a very good impersonation. 45th to 7th was the Norwegian gal, Kristen, that you had mentioned before, Leisdal. Mm-hmm. Leisdal. She's actually had 11 top 10s in slalom.
Yeah.
She did have to deal with some injuries, but looks like she's on her way back up.
Yeah, as I said, like, you know, she's had some really good results. I don't think we can discount her in the future for anything in the technical side. I think we're going to see her kind of remain in those positions.
Did you know that they actually get paid for the best attack from the back? They get $5,000.
Really?
I did not know that.
I didn't know that.
Oh, man. $5,000 for the biggest move up in numbers.
Huh.
Or is it Swiss francs? Whatever. Oh. It's 5,000 something.
So if you cut your bib in half, you're good.
I read that on some World Cup feed the other day. Hey, they cut their bib in half. That's the goal. I'm like, oh, my
what?
God. Are you
did they really?
About this? Now, what's not so good is if you purposely
that just gets on my nerves.
Too bad. This is a good fact. For someone who purposely keeps going in a course, once they straddle or make a mistake and they miss
a
gate,
there's a fine.
And they keep going, they get fined 5,000 Swiss francs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you know who the victim of that was? AJ Hurt.
Yes, I heard about that. That sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, so she won't get a biggest move up, but she will get fined 5,000 Swiss francs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you want to talk about a specific gal from Austria? Franziska Gritsch.
Oh, Gritsch, sure.
Mm-hmm. So she is actually racing separated from the Austrian team right now.
Yes. Okay, so Wendy and I have some very strong opinions on this.
We do indeed. Yes, we do.
You can write us all you want with like how controversial our opinions are on this, because we've had discussions prior to this happening.
Yes, we have. And now here it comes up again.
Yes.
So she ended up dating her coach. It's been going on for quite a while. People were aware of it. And now people don't want to deal with it anymore. And there, you can't. You just, the rules are, you sign a contract, you cannot date your athlete.
Well,
that's been forever.
I don't know what the Austrian coaching code of conduct is, but in the Canadian one, it specifically says that you can't date your athletes. Yeah.
Yes, it does. So, yeah, and that has been controversial in the past.
And we do a safe sport module as coaches, kind of declaring, and there is a question in that, which is basically, when is it acceptable to date your athlete? And they're like, never. And they're like, when is it acceptable after your athlete has retired to date them? So it's actually kind of interesting that this has happened. And safe sport for us has only been, I think, in fact, like in the past 5 years or so. It's pretty recent. And this came from the Bertrand Chéret problems.
That's great.
That were happening, and the things that, oh, Wendy, you and I have been calling for about 20 friggin' years.
More.
Yeah, more.
More.
Hey, guys, can we have an ombudsman? And then they're like, oh, you're a feminist. And we're like, yeah, yeah, because we want to be treated with equal respect. Thank you very much.
That's right. But not be taken advantage of. So the view is some people are saying, well, they're consenting adults.
No. So this is where Wendy and I also have an issue with this. Yes, consenting over the age of majority, so it's not like statutory rape. Congratulations, that's a really great bar to pass. But I definitely have problems with the fact that when you are coaching, you are always in a position of authority, and these athletes, since they were really little, like since they were like 3 or 4 years old in some cases, have been conditioned to obey to a certain degree and understand the power dynamic that a coach is in a position of power, and they kind of defer to that, and therefore I really disagree with people who are like, oh, consenting adults. I'm like, no, because there is a power. There's a reason why you don't, in the army, it's the same thing, or anything where there's a position of power. There's usually rules about this.
That's right. So I'm going to ixnay what those people are saying, because I disagree with them 100%. I don't care that they're adults. It's still the position of power. It's coach-athlete relationship.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And for the one woman who wrote on a feed that I said, she's like, love will always conquer. I'm like, say that to the divorce rate of 60%.
Guess she hasn't met the man of her dreams yet. So the results of this, the ramifications that Austria had to fire that coach.
Yes.
And she could have stayed with the team, but she chose to leave and be privately coached by him.
Yeah, and I think that that's up to them, right? Like that is one of those things where she and he have entered into a different type of contract that isn't under the. Do I agree also with the ethical side of still dating an athlete? Absolutely not. But I do think it was the right decision for Austria to let him go. Yeah. And if she chose to follow, then that's her, and so she'll get some of the benefits from the Austrian Federation, but not all of them. And he's going to. Probably, I'm going to guess, not get all that affected by his career, because skiing is still very old school and conservative. I cannot see a lot of ramifications. He'll probably get picked up by someone else or a different team, or keep on coaching her privately. Unfortunately, this is the realistic aspect of coaching in the sport, is that a lot of people and coaches fail upwards.
They do. And then part of the other aspect of this is that some of the athletes felt that there was some favoritism going on.
Oh, you think?
Yeah, I do. I really do. So,
we've seen this before.
Oh, absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, you. Before. I know. You and I have both personally seen this before in our careers, and this is also why I think it's unfair, and it's not something you should do, because it's not fair to the rest of the team. It's also your job.
Yes.
Like.
Take the best athletes. Yes.
Yeah. Also,
not the one you're dating.
Like, is it really so hard to just keep your dick in your pants?
Wow. Just go there. Okay.
Well, when you think not. Yeah. Well, how do you feel?
If you go, oh my God, she's 17. I shouldn't be doing this. Yeah.
It doesn't matter how old they are.
No, it doesn't matter how old they are.
No, it really doesn't. It's, yeah. So I just, yeah. So anyway, so this is our opinion. We have very strong thoughts on it because we've seen it before. We've also seen it really mess up athletes.
Absolutely, we have. And it's, you know, there's, oh God, I can't, don't even get me started. Yeah.
See, you think I'm being controversial because I'm saying about dick in your pants, but I can see that you're like holding back all those things. And like, that's the nicest thing we can say.
Poofs of smoke coming out of my ears right now.
Yeah. And I think that it's interesting also because a lot of this coverage is by men. And so they just don't see it from the women's perspective at all, or the perspective of being on the team as a female, or being from the perspective of a female coach when you have to watch this stuff. It's awful.
Yes. Yes. And I'm surprised nobody stepped forward earlier. Right?
But I am not.
That's part of the old school.
I am not surprised by that at all. Come on. Like,
well, I know.
FIS was like congratulating themselves when they got the women to set the first GS course in 2016, like pat on the back. We've only had the vote for 100 friggin' years.
Didn't we only just become people in the 1980s? Not in 1980s.
We got the right to credit cards in Canada in like 1972.
Moving on up.
Yeah.
So her expenses are still being paid by the Austrian Federation, but not her training.
Yeah, and I agree with that because it's like, I don't feel like they should penalize the athlete necessarily all the way. I really put this mostly on the coach.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Well, he still popped out in this race with an 11th place. So that's.
I'm not saying like it's about her results. I'm saying it's about the ethics.
Yeah, I agree. Sorry, everyone. I digress there. I just had to bring that up.
You've had our 5-minute rant about crap we've seen on the circuit that we disagree with.
Yes. Yes, we do. Okay, so let's move away from the women and go to the men.
All right. So, Madonna di Campiglio in Italia. Bene, Trentino. Bene.
Sì. So this was another night slalom.
Yes. Yes, it was. And I kind of like, and again, as I said, like I kind of like it also a little more festive to have these events at night ahead of the holidays, I think.
Yeah.
So
kinda it's like also a bar. finish line. It's fun.
Yeah, exactly. So the course name is Canalone Miramonti. The start altitude is 1725 and the finish altitude is 1545. The vertical drop is 180, the course length 470 meters. The first set was by Sweden, by Kalle Enoksen. And the second set was Matteo Joris by Switzerland. And the first run had 60 turning gates, 62 gates. The second one had 59 gates, 60 turning gates.
Oh my gosh. So they had been injecting this hill for over a month, injecting it with water. Why do they do that? To firm up the slope, to make sure it's
concrete,
race compatible event that they can have. So it was super icy, like super icy.
Yeah, but they still rut this up in the end. Like the second run still had some ruts going on it. For sure.
Yeah, they must have broken through in some sections.
Well, I think that's because of the temperature. It was only 0 degrees to minus two, right? So it still had that ability to like absorb everything. It was pretty warm.
Yeah. Yeah. So what did you think about the actual course, the race hill? What did you think about it?
I like this one. I like so there's a section in particular called Il Muro, which is the wall in Italian, and it's a steeper section. And then that comes into a bit of a flat and a knoll, which seems to me almost like a compression, but not quite, but it really throws the athletes off, as we can see from the results that come into this kind of like roller. And the way that the setters used it is kind of, they put like an off foot, right footer there, and it really threw quite a lot of people off. But on the Muro section, I really liked it because they had to be on it again. They had to be with it. They couldn't allow for the tempo to change. The first set I thought was quite easy. It was a little bit straighter, so it allowed for a little bit more recovery and mistakes. But the second set did not allow for that at all.
Right. So that first run with a straighter set does allow for closer times.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It doesn't really separate them as much. And yeah, the second one was 3 seconds slower time-wise.
Yeah. And I mean, like, you saw them having to turn and work it. Also, the ruts were getting, because of that offset, the ruts were getting a little deeper. So the later bibs that were coming in had to actually compensate for some of the ruts, ride the rut or take a different line in order to get over some of the sections. We saw a lot of people coming in, especially at the top section. There was a little bit of a knoll and a left footer. And that left footer caused quite a bit of issues for quite a few athletes. People just coming in, making mistakes. A couple of people went out on it. It was kind of an interesting set, we'll say that.
Well, I really liked the hill itself. It was, you had to think the whole way down. It wasn't just a highway and going straight down. It was very turny. The middle section was super offset. The athletes have to maintain that good balance and rhythm. There were a lot of knolls in there. It was super steep at the top. There was a side hill, off camber turns, basically the whole way. Another knoll going into the finish. Like, these athletes have to think the whole way down. So I love that technically demanding course.
Yeah. And the one thing that also with this course is there's no room to make it up, because it is like the shortest slalom out of the whole thing. So I really enjoyed the fact that if they really screwed up, it was not going to happen for them. So it made it quite exciting.
Oh no.
And people were screwing up in different areas, which was kind of interesting as well. Like, some people kind of messed up on the pitch. Some people, like the people with the upper body discipline, skied the pitch really well and just had to watch out for some of the rollers and the off cambers. And that's where they were sometimes making rollers. That mistake.
Yeah.
And then you had these people that were really good on the rollers and then came down and then didn't have the upper body discipline for the Muro section. And then you would see them. So it was interesting to see the different styles and different strengths and weaknesses of each skier, and seeing what really kind of tripped them up a little bit.
Well, one of the German athletes actually said the first course said it was so easy. It was a Mickey Mouse course.
Well, I mean, I just like to point out that Clément Noël, when he came across the line on the first run, he goes, "C'est pas si mal." He was fourth.
Yeah.
Which means it's not so bad.
Yeah. Now this race, so very challenging. I really liked it. I had it's written in my notes here that Christofferson has won it three times. Daniel Yule has won it three times. Alberto Tomba has also won it three times. Kind of cool.
Yeah.
And did you know Ingemar Stenmark? This was his very first World Cup victory here.
Was it really?
1974. He won it five times, but his first victory ever was at Madonna.
Oh, wow. 2 years after I could have gotten a credit card. If I was alive, but I wasn't.
Oh, my God.
I have to say the one person I actually really like watching from first to second run is Popov from Bulgaria.
Oh, how can you not love him?
He's, you know, short in stature, but he's got, you know, the interesting thing for slalom is that he's got such a wide stance and he's such a stocky dude. I just call him the bulldog from Bulgaria now.
Bulldog from Bulgaria. I like that. That's pretty good.
And then the Frenchman, De Grippe, who is, you know, one of the later bib starters, it's like he's, 58. He was grinding his edges and he was tense, but his line was pretty straight on. And the straighter set, I think, worked to his advantage, whereas it didn't for the second. But I think that we can expect he's young. It's first or second World Cup. And, you know, I just think that if he continues to ski the way he does and tries to pick up and learn from what he's done, he's definitely going to be one to watch in the future for the men.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, good for him. I mean, it's two totally different racing styles, right? There's a bulldog. I can't use your word because that's describing an athlete. The highways, where they're just freaking giver, and then there's the more technical. And it's two different ways of skiing. So I think that showed in the second run.
Yeah, and I mean, watching our lovely Eric Reed come down, his start was really smooth. He was very strong. And then his transition on the pitch really wasn't as smooth and a bit grindy. He had pretty good upper body discipline, but he needed to let the ski go and actually have a little fun. He made it look like it was full of effort.
Well, maybe he's putting pressure on himself, right? He hasn't had the best results this year, and maybe he's getting frustrated and really, really wants to do well. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when you do that, you're almost overworking or overthinking when you're in the course.
Yeah, for sure.
So this is his 10th year on the World Cup.
Yeah.
Like I remember when he was like born, he was really sick in the summer, that could have affected some of his training. He's had some knee and back issues. So if he can put the whole package together and be nice and healthy, maybe we'll start to see some of those results.
Yeah. And what do you think about Greece?
Well, okay. Greece is American.
Yes. Obviously. When you see the interviews at the bottom, I'm like, okay, American.
Yeah. Now, he obviously, who cares where he's from? He's still doing really well, but it does put a name on the map for Greece. Mm-hmm. So AJ Guinness finished in 10th, and he, he's doing really well. Didn't he get on the podium earlier?
Yeah, his heels, he tends to ski a bit back on his heels a little bit, but he's just so aggressive and strong in his core that he made up for it. I was actually pretty impressed that he did as well as he did, given the fact that skiing on your heels is really hard to recover from, also in a course that's extremely short. So,
Yeah. So he was 0.74 out and in 10th place. That's pretty close, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, a lot of close ones. Our Liam Wallace, unfortunately, didn't qualify. And I know he's getting out there, getting some experience. I'm just wondering, maybe Europa Cup.
Yeah, probably.
For him and Justin. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they're having difficulties getting into that flip. So maybe they need to build their confidence doing a few more Europa Cups.
Well, I mean, that is something that typically happens with rookies on the national team, is they will do quite a bit of Europa Cup and even like high-end FIS races. I mean, I showed up to a FIS race in Adelboden and the whole, you know, B team, women's German team was there. The points are great.
But... Well, they're even saying a lot of the Europa Cups might even be more competitive than the World Cups.
Yeah, that is. Well, it is true. And also, Europa Cup is a dog-eat-dog world. Once you kind of get on the World Cup, like, you're supported in a different way financially as well. You have more chances for sponsors and so on and so forth. When you're in Europa Cup, you're really trying to make a name for yourself. And it is highly vicious and competitive at times.
Absolutely.
It's a family, but like kind of sometimes a little Jerry Springer-ish.
Wow. Oprah to Jerry, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, this is only their second slalom race of the season.
Yes.
Isn't that crazy? It seems like we've been going forever, and we've actually
the women have been going forever, but the men have not.
Yeah. No, they have not. So the results. So we have to get working with our Canadian boys, get them back on track, and the Europa Cup, I think, might be a good way for some of the younger ones to get that experience again.
Yeah, I was surprised by a couple of the people. I thought that Vinetzer would actually ski better, but he was really hippy and back at the top, so that really kind of definitely didn't give him the results that he needed.
No, you need to start off strong right out of that start gate, because it's really steep, and you just gotta be focused and knowing, talking to yourself the whole way down, right? Like, it's so important to have that incredible focus for that slalom run.
Yeah, and I mean, if we look at Atle McGrath, I think he's definitely one to look out for as well. I mean, he popped in a top 10. His American dad was a ski racer, but he skis for Norway, because his mom is Norwegian, just FYI.
Yeah, so I used to race when his dad was racing back in the 80s, so I know who Felix is. And his mom was actually a cross-country skier.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Yeah, so he actually used to compete in cross-country when he was younger as well. Mm-hmm. How the heck did I know that shit? I don't know. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah. So let's talk about who had some issues. Zubcik had some issues coming down the wall, for sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Olsen got caught hips back coming over the roller. He's 22, mm-hmm. so he's got some time to figure it out, for sure. Kristoffersen.
You know who I'm sad for?
Well,
don't talk about Kristoffersen yet. I want to talk about Ramon Zenhausen.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I'm kind of disappointed in his result. I'm sure he is as well. But he just can't get his poop in a group.
Yeah.
And get those solid runs. And I want him to, because he's so nice and tall. And I just want him to do really well.
Yeah, I feel like there's something missing from his skiing that was there before. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's changed his equipment setup and maybe he's trying to refine it, because sometimes that does happen. I know that also there has been some issues with a couple of the other racers, like just kind of messing around with their equipment. And maybe you don't need mm-hmm. to, and you just need to learn your setup and then just ski it better. But I don't know. I have no idea what is going on with him, but he's definitely not as consistent as he was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, no. Okay, back to your Kristoffersen.
Yeah, so Kristoffersen wasn't as smooth as I would like to say. And again, like, this is an equipment setup thing. They say he's been switching around quite a lot lately, and I don't know if that's really affecting him or not, but it's not. He's just not carrying the momentum like he used to.
Yeah, it's just not quite there. He did finish up in sixth.
Mm-hmm.
Solid result, but I just feel like he is also another one of those guys that I have higher expectations for, and to get on that podium.
Yep. Timmy Haugen, really great run. Like, nothing, like, made a few little bips and bobbles here and there, but actually, like, I really liked it. I had no problems with it.
Another Norwegian, he got fourth, and his run was very good. It was very solid. I didn't see any overt, massive mistakes.
Well, and
it was quite exciting.
And so sometimes I wonder, because he came in 16th in the second run, like that was mm-hmm. the 16th fastest time. So I'm wondering if, because it looked so clean, he skied it too clean.
Yeah. Well, golly. I mean, this goes back to all those really, really close times,
mm-hmm.
like yeah. less than the blink of an eye. And so for him, out of third, he was 2/100ths.
Yeah.
And the guy behind him, Manny Feller, was 2/100ths. And then 1/100th behind him was Kristoffersen. 3/100ths behind him was Millard, right? And yeah. oh my God, and it just goes on. Atlee was 5/100ths behind him. Like, it was so close.
Well, should we talk about third place, your favorite? And also, I'm rooting for this guy as well.
Yes.
Dave Riding.
So,
congratulations,
amazing.
Buddy.
37 years old. 37. Mm-hmm. He was 15th after the first run. And in the start, he's like, to himself, he's like, fight, Dave, fight.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I like, yeah, let's go. I just want to go do it right now. I'm getting chills, actually. It was amazing. But he was so balanced and so strong in that outside.
So strong. Yeah, like, absolutely. Really strong. Not a lot of technical errors at all. Very quiet and very confident. And it really showed in his result. He had the second fastest run, second run.
That's right.
I just think that the way that he came out of the start and actually kind of really went for some of those off cambers, like the off cambers, like people were getting kind of caught back and everything was on the outside ski. He was just working it and just carrying that momentum going forward instead of letting the ski dictate where he went. He was driving the ski instead. Just really nice, solid positioning, going down the hill, constantly moving down the hill. And then on the Muro, when he didn't want to really accelerate down, he just used the deflection to go from one gate to the other. Very, very precise, I found.
Oh, I'm thrilled with his run. He had one World Cup victory in Kitzbühel
in
2023. Yeah, that was super duper exciting. And he came across the finish line, and what does he say? Merry Christmas! he was leading at the time, but, you know, it was a Merry Christmas to him. I'm sure he's going to have a fantastic Christmas.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely a great story. I mean, I think that we have to stop also considering Dave Riding anymore as being kind of like, we kind of considered him an underdog, but he's really been extremely consistent in the past 2-3 seasons. And I don't know if it's because we just have this bias that Great Britain is a, not a ski country.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't take that off the table.
Yeah, I think we do have to take that off the table. And he's earned it. And the British guys, even in the first run still, I'm still excited for the British team coming up because those younger guys, like, they're all pushing each other. And apparently as a team, when they're training, they're not phoning it in. They try to win every single training run.
Yeah. Well, he was only 0.39 out from the winner. Mm-hmm. So congratulations, Dave Riding. Whoop, whoop. Way to go.
Yeah. Awesome. Noel Clément.
Second place, 0.25 out.
Yep.
Now, for a big, tall guy, he's 6'3", he can move those legs pretty darn quickly.
Oh, yeah. And the one thing that I would like to say, if you want to see two extremely different types of skiing, watch Popov's run, who's like 5 foot five and like a bulldog, and Noel, who is like super tall. And you'll really be able to understand when we say that when you get to the World Cup level, also at that point, you kind of have the basic technique figured out, but then you have to work with your personal biomechanics. And this is an excellent example of two people with extremely different builds that are obviously skiing this very differently, but consistently in the top 10.
That's right. And you do have to adjust for size matters, people. You have to make those adjustments. Right. And so for him, and the second course was so turny and so icy and so technically difficult. And he skied it amazing. So I think now he has had 10 victories in the past and 22 podiums. His best result at Madonna was third in 2020. So he moved up from there.
Yep. Second. Now he's got to come in first next year. Otherwise, he's just... Right.
Those stats are for nothing.
Exactly. Okay. So. Winner.
Winner, were you surprised or not?
I was.
Okay, why?
I was surprised because his first run he came in sixth, his second run he came in third, so he definitely like wasn't as clean as some of the other runs. He seemed to get kind of caught in the ruts a little bit. It didn't look as, you could see the ski reacting, it just didn't look as solid as someone like Riding's run, right, who was obviously second in the first run, so he beat him in the second run. But I just didn't think that shorts looked as solid, and I was surprised. Like, I mean, it is a 2-run race and he did win, but I definitely didn't think he outskied any, like, obviously statistically he didn't, but it didn't look like he was as clean as the others either.
Okay. Well, I'm going to disagree with you on that one.
Okay. Well, fine. I think we can't be friends anymore.
Whatever. Just make me some cookies and it'll be all good. So I found him to be very balanced, incredibly balanced. He had that super quick movement. He did make some mistakes. So that's where you're talking about.
Yeah.
So he did make a couple of mistakes going down the course, but he was so fast at the bottom. And
his combos are fast.
Very fast. Like those feet just move so quickly.
He wins those combos every time. And I think that's maybe how he won this. But
well, I think, you know, where you talked about the off camber. So your turns aren't going to be exactly the same now. They're not going to be equal because of that off camber. And I think he took advantage of some of those off camber turns of, you know, reading obviously the run well, but using those quick turns, or, you know, that left foot was the longer one, right one was the upper one. So I think he read that very well and took advantage of that. Even though he did make those mistakes, he did end up the big wiener. So
Do you know what that means? He's actually beating Odermatt now in the overall standings. So it's going to be an interesting season, because also, like, those speed guys are a massive disadvantage if they keep on canceling races, right? So I know they're tacking them on and making our lives for podcasting very interesting indeed, but I think that it's going to be very hard for those speed guys to pull it off, and I'm hoping that they can get the races in that they need to. But I mean, there was always an argument that the tech guys had an advantage for the overall all the time anyway. So I think that this also kind of also benefits the tech guys again.
I'm gonna swing with you over there, but then this is their only second race.
Yeah, but they've had GSs in there too.
Yes, that's right, they have had GSs as
well. And I know that we have had some speed guys, and I think the speed guys do pop into those GS runs so that they can get the points for the overall as well.
Well, Marco took home 50,000. Is it Swiss francs? Or Canadian, which is $10?
Yeah, right.
And they pay all the way down to third, so the 30th. So the 30th place got 1,000. So, you know, mm-hmm. that helps cover the beer tab over there.
Yeah, that's funny. And then if you're an attack from the back in your top 30, you tack on 5,000 of that, right?
That's right. So that goes to Dominic, in my opinion, Dominic Rascher from Austria. Yeah. He started number 50 and finished 20th. And he earned 5,000.
Well, Hugo de Grip was 58.
Where'd he finish?
Oh, I guess not. He's 24th, but it's the most that you move up, right? So
the most, yeah. So that he beat him by like 4 spots, quote unquote. So fine, your guy wins.
Well, yeah, it's not affecting me anyway, so I'm not gonna get it.
No, it doesn't matter.
Stop paying my mortgage.
No, that's right. So did you know that since 2014, only one of the 9 men's World Cups in Modena were won by an Austrian?
No,
I did
not.
Since 2014. Hirscher won in 2017. Mm-hmm. So it's been a while. And let's see, Schwartz finished second in 3 of the men's 7 World Cup events. And his best result, like I said, was second in 2018. Maybe I didn't say that, but that was his best result prior. So now he beated it. He beated it.
Oh, yeah. You've been listening to your teenage kids too much.
Their vocabulary is actually way better than mine. So, you know.
That's anyway. Not shocking either.
Yeah. Right. Wait a minute. What? Wait, what?
Well, okay. I think that's all I really have. I mean, we're going to be back here for the races. I think Borbio is coming up super fast.
Yeah, right after Christmas time.
Yep, yep. So
yeah,
we'll be back on it and podcasting away. And for everybody out there, happy holidays and happy solstice and happy Hanukkah like a week ago, I guess.
So. Yeah, Merry Christmas, Merry whatever your celebration is. We hope you all stay safe and happy over the holiday season.
Oh.
Wonder if you're shipping me any cookies.
Well,
did I say that out loud? Oops.
This week, I've been Shelley not sending Wendy any cookies.
And I've been Wendy still hoping for cookies.
Keep your tips up.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Do you like my Fizz cookies?
Okay, I'm talking about that on the pod, so we're not talking about that right now. I'm not saying anything right now at all. My voice is better.
Yes. Yes, I missed the sexiness of the last one.
I know, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Now how am I supposed to get turned on?
Okay, my laugh isn't quite there yet. My-